Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is 93XRT. I'm Lynn Bramer, and today it is our pleasure to welcome to the airwaves of Chicago, says right here on the artwork, the heartbeat of Pink Floyd, although I think he had a lot to do with the soul of Pink Floyd. We welcome Nick Mason to the airwaves.
Hi.
Well, hello, Nick Mason. The big news is Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets is a musical project you've put together. It's coming to the Chicago Theater on April 4th, and hopefully the temperatures will inch over freezing by the time you get here. And you have decided to tackle ambitiously the earliest part of the Pink Floyd catalog. Why did you decide, with the legacy of Pink Floyd, all of the stuff you could have chosen, why did you say, hey, let's go back to the beginning?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons, but one of them is because it's pretty crowded out there on the Dark Side of the Moon and Beyond department. We've got both David and Roger playing quite a lot of those sort of tracks, and about a million tribute bands also hammering away at it. And I really wanted something that where we could try and recreate or visit the sort of the feel of Pink Floyd in period, and not necessarily slavishly try and recreate every song exactly as it was recorded. So I want something where we just had a bit more breathing space with it. And there's some great songs there. The other thing is that it's a sort of, I won't say undiscovered, but particularly I think in the USA, that people are less familiar with what we did before Dark Side. That a lot of people think maybe we kicked off with that. And there's some interesting songs, you know, with Syd Barrett's things and things we did for movies and sort of ideas that were then developed into later albums.
Now, I've heard that you've reflected that Saucerful of Secrets is actually your favorite Pink Floyd album. Is there a reason or a bunch of reasons for that?
Yeah, I think it's a pointer as to where we were going to go in the future. You know, I think albums like Umaguma and Atom Heart Mother are interesting, but they're less sort of in the direction we went. They were almost like sort of side streets in the whole thing. And I really like the mix on Saucer. I think Jugband Blues is a really sort of sad but beautifully sort of executed goodbye to Syd. And I think Set the Controls is one of the best songs that Roger ever wrote out of all the things that he's done.
Well, I'm old enough to remember doing overnight shifts at an FM station in the early 70s and going, okay, we're setting the controls right now for the Heart of the Sun. And, and you know, it's interesting you mentioned that a lot of this material is compared to some of the mass. I mean, Dark Side of the Moon was on the Billboard charts for 20 years or something. You talk about how some of this might have been overlooked or not as well remembered. And I've seen Pink Floyd a number of times, and a lot of the stuff on your set list that's coming to the Chicago Theater April 4th is not stuff that you normally heard at Pink Floyd concerts in the last quarter of a century, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
But you should know that for some reason, the song Interstellar Overdrive, I've heard major bands cover in concert in the last, say, decade. Chicago's own Smashing Pumpkins have covered Interstellar Overdrive as an encore. So I think there's something that really has stuck with people who were into Pink Floyd from the very beginning about that early stuff.
Well, the nice thing with Interstellar is that it's a song that it's always interesting to hear other people play it, because it has no very specific parts that should be slavishly followed. You know, there is a version on the album on Piper, but it's so open to improvisation. During certainly in the middle parts of the piece, the last time I heard it was the opening to the movie Doctor Strange, which was totally unexpected.
You know, between these first two albums, The Piper at the Gates of Dawn, Saucer Full of Secrets, when you were recording these or helping to write this music, was there a consciousness that you were doing something revolutionary, that there really wasn't anybody else out there doing the sort of experimentation that you guys were doing?
Not really. I mean, because there was so much going on at the time. I mean, when we made Piper, you know, that was a relatively small album, because we were recording it in Abbey Road, 50 feet away, the Beatles were doing Sgt. Pepper, which was such an important part of, you know, musical change. I don't think we thought we're breaking new ground when we're next door to what was going on there.
Well, that's a very modest answer. But still, nevertheless, the sonic experimentation of Pink Floyd, I have to believe it's influenced generations of musicians. Something that I've always wondered, you know, as the percussionist, as the drummer, and with all the sounds that would emanate from Pink Floyd album, were there moments in recording sessions where you said, hey, guys, you know, I can actually just play the drums here?
No. I think I've always loved the thing of being able to, you know, find other ways of doing it. I think on Saucer, there was a point at which we thought it might be interesting to try playing the cymbals by beating them and then lowering them into a large bucket of water at the same time. And I love that sort of thing, you know, where you just come up with some weird idea to find some entirely new sound. I mean, it's different now because we can all sample everything and mix those samples together. But there was something wonderfully crude and effective about technology in what was, when was it, late 60s.
Right. Now, a lot of bands put out a first album. Maybe it's two or three or four albums before anybody takes any notice. Were you a little surprised that you had a hit single right off the bat, off your first album, a top five, top ten single in the UK?
It's slightly different, because in the UK, the singles were not actually on the album, which was one of those sort of curious differences between American and UK thinking on that. We weren't entirely surprised. I mean, we had a very good team. We had initially Joe Boyd and then Norman Smith. EMI were really behind trying to launch this new band. So getting onto Top of the Pops and having a hit single was... it's always a surprise. You can't guarantee it. But that was part of the plan, if you like. What was less part of the plan was finding ourselves becoming less and less of a singles band and becoming more and more of an album band rather quickly. And again, interestingly, I think, a lot of bands were affected by the success of Sgt. Pepper. This idea that an album was more important than a single was entirely, you know, in 1967, this was a big change, and the record companies all had to completely readjust to this sort of thinking.
Well, especially since in 1967, if you turned on the radio, and it was virtually all AM radio, you had to have singles that were 2-3 minutes long. And Pink Floyd comes along, and part of your legacy is you went to the studio and created masterpieces that were 11 minutes long, 9 minutes long. And I'm sure the record company was thrilled when you said, you know, not only is Diamonds like 11 minutes, but there's another part that's just as long.
Well, the breakthrough record, do you remember The Animals, House of the Rising Sun? That was about 6 or 7 minutes. Everyone said, no, you can't do this. It'll never get played on the radio. But actually, they just released it, and it changed people's thinking.
That is so true. So you're actually giving credit to some of those people that have come before you. But, I think of the period of Pink Floyd that, as you referenced, most people would consider the golden age of Pink Floyd, you know, Animals and Dark Side of the Moon and all of that stuff. And those were albums where you guys said, you know, we're not worried about compartmentalizing our imagination. We're gonna write these songs, perform these songs, and as long as they are, that's how it's gonna roll out.
But as I say, I think there were a lot of us doing that sort of thing. That's what music was at the time, and we seemed to actually, curiously, to be coming back round to shorter pieces. The album has been sort of replaced by, people talk about EPs now. I mean, it's a sort of fictitious thing, but they'll release maybe 3 tracks rather than an album full of tracks.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are bands that release single after single after single before even talking about releasing an album. I want to talk about, before we let you go, some of the people playing with you on the Nick Mason tour, the Saucerful of Secrets tour, coming to the Chicago Theater April 4th. You have the guitarist from Spandau Ballet, Gary Kemp, is playing guitar. He's also doing a lot of the vocals, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah, he's been. I mean, I think people have been really surprised. I think people compartmentalize music far too easily and assume that a new romantic and a great songwriter like Gary is stuck in a particular genre of music, which is not the case at all. He's absolutely been. I think people have been really impressed with what he does and his playing, and certainly his guitar work is just terrific, and it's not something you've ever heard of with Spandau, but you'll certainly hear it with us.
You also have a guy that you know very well because he's toured with Pink Floyd, bass player Guy Pratt is playing with you guys, another guitarist, Lee Harris.
Lee Harris, who was with Ian Drury and the Blockheads, a very fine band, and Don Beacon, who was did a lot of work with Rick, but also is in a band called The Orb, who done a lot of sort of dance and house music, but wonderfully capable and wonderfully varied in his approach. Spent quite a lot of time working in India in Bollywood on film schools there, so we haven't as yet got him playing the sitar, but you never know.
It's a delightfully eclectic band, if you ask me.
Yes.
Drawn from all kinds of disciplines. Well, Nick Mason, it's such a pleasure to talk to you after all these years. Saucerful of Secrets tour coming to the Chicago Theater on April 4th. Now, considering post-Syd Barrett material, some of the stuff that happened later, what do you think of as your defining moment in Pink Floyd with a song?
I would say Set the Controls. I still think it's one of the most powerful songs that we've ever performed. It's sort of outside the box in terms of rock and roll. It's played in a different way. It's played for the drum parts. It's mallets rather than sticks, and it's just got an atmosphere to it. After 50 odd years, I absolutely still love playing it.
And Dark Side of the Moon. What is your go-to selection on there?
Well, the great thing with Dark Side is it's a sort of mysterious, it works as a whole rather than individual songs. But I suppose probably for me the introduction to Time, because I've never managed to play it the same way twice.
I hadn't thought of that.
One day I'll learn it.
Well, I'm sure you can do whatever you want, Nick Mason, and XRT listeners even remember your solo output and the XRT hit Lie for a Lie. And you're also the guy that I think it can explain grooving with a Pict sometime. Nick Mason, you take care of yourself.
Yeah, we haven't got long enough. Thank you.
The title would be the entire interview. You take care of yourself. Yeah. Nick Mason, look forward to seeing you. Chicago Theater, April 4th, Saucerful of Secrets tour. Thank you, Nick Mason.
Thanks, Lynn.
That's Nick Mason of Pink Floyd fame coming to Chicago to play material essentially from the first two Pink Floyd albums and some other surprises. Tickets are on sale through Ticketmaster. That show at the Chicago Theater is April 4th, and we are 93XRT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.